Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, you'll really appreciate our next guest. He's Donald L. Shepherd, who's here to tell listeners how to succeed without a college degree. Don, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Dan. I'm really happy to be here, and thank you for this opportunity.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background and why you wrote this fascinating book.
First the book and then a quick background, but the book is The Dividends of Decency, The Dividends of Decency, and it can be pre-ordered at Amazon or any of the local bookstores, and it's coming out April 16th, I think, in the U.S. and May 1st in Canada, The Dividends of Decency by Donald Lee Shepherd. Thank the book. On November the 16th, 2016, I was pretty upset that Donald Trump was elected president. And I felt like I needed to do something. And so the one thing I decided that I should do is write a book and talk about the fact that real leaders, really real successful business people are not like Donald Trump. They're people that have values, morals, integrity, and that in fact is key to being successful in business. So that's why I'm writing the book. My background and a brief summary is that I was born and raised in a mining town in Northern Ontario in Canada. A tough nickel mining city, and when I was 17 years old, I finished grade 13, didn't want to go to university. I wanted to get out there and make something of myself, and did so, and I won't bore you with the whole story, but through a series of efforts and hard work, I rose through the ranks, and eventually in 1985, I started my own business that grew and became quite successful, and I sold it to Omnicom in 2000. So is that a brief enough summary? I'm Canadian, and I moved to the U.S. in 1980. I was transferred by the consulting company that I worked for.
Well, that's a pretty good start. So you're in the wrong – I think you're in the wrong pew or the wrong church in terms of anti-Trump, but we'll let that go. But
that's okay, yes.
Having said that, you write a book, but why did you pick this particular topic? And because obviously there's a lot of them, Canadian in America, etc. Why did you pick that topic?
Because, in fact, I wanted to get out the message that that's what's necessary. Values-based leadership is what drives successful businesses. And as I said, that's not what I see in Trump, and I'm not here to discuss politics. And so I picked that topic to say, oh, my goodness, most businesses in America are so successful, and they're successful because their leaders have integrity, values, morals. And that's why I picked that topic. I was worried that the view of business leaders might be tainted. So that's why I went that route.
Well, I'm going to go in a different direction with one question and turn it over to Dan, because I'm sure he's chomping at the bit. but my question is, given all of this talk about how the leaders in business have been using their power to abuse women, how could you say what you just did?
Yeah. If in fact, you look at those people, starting with Weinberg and on through, they're not successful in business. And it's not saying, Dan, that there aren't ruthless, immoral people running businesses. I'm saying that to be successful in business, you need to have them. So it's in fact, you make an excellent point. The people who have, in fact, discriminated against women, sexually harassed them, you go and look at their profiles. They're not successful. And that is the message I'd like to pass along too. So you didn't go off. You didn't go off track. That was an excellent question.
Well, Dan, I have to say, do one follow-up question. Harvey Weinstein was successful for 30 years preying on women. And if you look at all, like the man that was just ousted from Ford. I mean, you go all the way up to be president of Ford Motor Company before you're caught. I think you're pretty successful. But having said that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan.
That was a quick out before I could reply, so I'll leave it. Let's
nope.
go on to Dan.
No.
I want you to reply to what Don's comment. Go ahead.
And so do you think, if you look down at his history, all the years that Weinstein was in business, the efforts he went to quiet down people who accused him of charges, he had literally a whole system of intimidation. And so was he successful, you think, just because he made money? That's not success in life. That's not wealth. And eventually he was caught. So, and I don't know anything about the Ford CEO situation. I just don't. So I'm not going to comment on that. But success isn't making money. That's just a byproduct of being a good person and running a good business. And instead, look at all the billionaires who have been so incredibly successful, whether it's Warren Buffett or Bill Gates or Mark Cuban or Michael Bloomberg. These are hugely successful people, not because of making money, but because of what they've done for the country and what they're giving back. Again, too long an answer. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do all that. But thank you for giving me a chance to reply, Dan.
Dan, it's all yours from now on.
Thank you. I'm interested in the subject matter because I believe that that there are many executives in our country today who make decisions based on the prevailing wind. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. First National Bank of Omaha, who has had the sponsorship of the National Rifle Association's credit card program for decades, tells the National Rifle Association they're no longer going to be the provider.
Right.
Avis and Hertz and United and Delta. These companies who have fed at the trough of the relationship with the National Rifle Association for decades, all of a sudden have become supposedly found a moral compass as it relates to the shooting in the high school.
Yes.
And they decided they're going to no longer put their companies in jeopardy by continuing to support the National Rifle Association and its members. And I think that type of decision, I spent a lot of years working in the corporate world, and I think that what we have, I write commentary, and I write current events commentary for 8 different blogs, but I just have a piece that's being published right now, is that I wonder if these corporations who have decided they're no longer going to do business with the National Rifle Association, are they making it from a moral high ground, or have they been inundated with attacks in their social media contacts under threats that people will no longer do business with them? And I'm concerned that there is a situation where having spent a lot of time working in the affinity space, some of the biggest affinity groups in the country, mm-hmm. negotiating contracts for them, I know that these decisions about whether you're going to continue with sponsorship or not continue with sponsorship is not something that's made in a couple of days, but there's a tremendous amount of research. And if you're going to get rid of somebody, you need to have a replacement in order to maintain your relationship. And none of that seemed to be in play. All of a sudden they announced they weren't going to do it, and the ball started rolling down the hill, and other organizations and management teams decided, well, I guess we better get on board of getting away from the NRA. So I don't think there were good business decisions that were being made, and they seemed to be political or influenced by a certain number of people. I mean, today we had very, very insightful news that has to have an impact on that shooting. We found out today that there were 4 armed police officers on the grounds of the high school, and not one of the 4 went into the building to approach the shooter. Not one of the 4. We have decisions that are being made without all the evidence. And when you make short-term decisions, at least based on what you believe has happened, then you're not being a responsible corporate executive and making good decisions, I don't think.
Well, you've covered a lot of ground. You started by saying, do we think it was a moral decision or was it a response to the overwhelming social media efforts? And, of course, you answered your own question because it certainly wasn't a moral question because they already established morals when they did business with them in the first place. And so certainly right. It was, I would argue, a business decision that they felt they would lose more business than they would gain. I'm not in the boardroom. But so I think the answer to your first question is definitely not a moral issue. It is a business decision. I might argue with you, but again, I'm not in the boardroom and I haven't seen the thing that whether it was a good business decision and that they might have looked at how much business they could lose versus how much they would gain by staying with the NRA. So your points are absolutely valid, Don. You mostly answered your own question as you wandered through and examined it all. I don't believe they pulled away from the I this is a personal decision with no authority behind it. I don't think they pulled out of relationship with NRA because of the gun issue. I think it was strictly a business customer issue. And the boycott that was being promoted around the country. Again, I've said too much as well, but that's my thought
that's
on
okay.
that subject.
Okay, so let's go back to the premise of your book.
Yes,
and I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
You don't need a college degree to be successful.
Well,
how do you know that's true?
Well, that's me, and that's not the premise of the book. The book is that values-based leadership drives success in business, but the question is a valid one. You don't need a degree to be successful. It sure as heck helps. All that I'm saying in there is it can be done, and there are ways, and I'm a perfect example of it. The 17-year-old out of a mining town, poor and all the rest of it, no connections, and how I worked through the system and became quite successful in multiple areas. But so it can be done. It's not easy, and it sure would be easier if you had assets, if you had connections, if you went to the best universities. My children went to Duke and Harvard. I mean, I'm not talking about shortchanging them and saying don't get an education. So is your question, what does it take to become successful without a degree? Because I have answers for that.
Yeah, I, the reason why I'm asking, I'm fascinated with the subject matter, is
yes,
that I know – I know that 20, based on statistics right now, that about 25% of the people who are graduating from college currently and for the last probably almost 10 years, at least 25% cannot find a permanent job in their specialty.
Yep.
I can also tell you that plumbers and carpenters and masons, mm-hmm. bricklayers, make very, very good livings. In fact, many times make more money than people who are sitting on their parents' couch because they can't find a job.
Yep.
So that our society has realized that we need some skilled labor in our lives because we as males or females don't want to figure out how to stop the leaking toilet or change out a broken window or put on a roof or whatever. But the skilled labor demand and the revenue, the income that can be earned, the wealth that can be accumulated, may in fact be a better opportunity than paying what $200,000 for college and graduate with a $200,000 worth of debt and not be able to have enough money income to service the debt?
There's no argument from me whatsoever. And you already know this based on your research, but countries like Germany and Canada, where I'm from, they encourage kids coming out of school to get into trade. So that's there's no question there. The issue of people not getting jobs may be more than just the fact that, well, it may be much a factor that the degrees they have are pretty meaningless. There's no specialty in it. I mean, you get a four-year undergraduate degree, it's not giving you any expertise in any area, very rarely, unless you went into economics or accounting or whatever. So coming out with a four-year degree in most of the majors doesn't do anything for you. The grades you get and where you went to school and the type of education you got is a factor to be able to get an interview. But once you're into that job, it's performance from that point forward. And my argument is that people without a degree, if they can get into a line, and I'll talk about it if you'd like, once they get it, then it's all performance. And all that silliness of degrees and all the rest goes away. It's performance. It's in there. And what you do, once you do in the job to have that performance, that's what I know about and a lot about. I'm with you. I'm with you, Dan, on the issue of trades. It's much, much better. Most of my family, that's what they are, tradesmen in Canada, all a huge family. And they're just fine. Thank you very much. They don't.
Yeah,
there wasn't any magic path to a university degree. Anyway, right. I'm wandering again on you. Don't mean to.
That's okay. I had a chance to do an interview on another show with a gentleman who was a recruiter for corporations, and I thought it was absolutely hysterical in one of the comments that he made, and he said. So I said, well, what kind of people are you recruiting? Who are you looking for? And he said to me in the interview, he said, I advise human resource people when they're looking at college graduates that if they have a degree and it ends in studies, don't hire them.
Yep. Yep.
Because they're not going to be able to do anything and help you in your corporate world. Studies. And the other thing is that the cost of education has exploded, and that the amount of debt that students come out of college with, or parents who are giving up their retirement dollars to help pay for a college for a child. I'm wondering because of the lack of economic opportunity, which has been so poor for the last 10, 12 years. And this is not an issue about Mr. Trump, but the fact that the economy has exploded under Mr. Trump, maybe there's more opportunity for those people who have college degrees. But without economic expansion, I'm wondering if there wasn't for some period of time a diminishment in the value of a college education.
Well. I don't want to wander into politics or policy, I don't think what you just said a few minutes ago, it makes so much sense that most college degrees don't get you anything in terms of getting into a specific career because they don't teach you specific skills. Absolutely right. That's not changing with an expansion of the economy. And your recruiter that you talked to was spot on. When I'm talking about people without a college degree, all that's going to matter once they get that first job, and I can talk to that, is performance on the job. That whole issue will never change. It hasn't changed in the I'm 70 years old now. In 23 years, and I'm sorry, 53 years, and it's not going to change in the next 153 years. I don't see that changing. If the government goes to offering more trade schools and helping kids get in them, that will make a huge difference. But not the issue whether there'll be more jobs for college-educated people. Manufacturing jobs aren't going to college-educated people. They're going to people in right. trades and have other skills, I think. Right. I think, and I'm far from an expert in that.
Okay. Back to you, Don.
I'd love to jump in here because, you know, I have 3 degrees, and mm-hmm. but I only say it because my parents said you had to go to college for the first degree, and the second one was anyway. But the main point I'd like to make is that what you said, it's not the degree, it's what you do with it and how you do it after
That's
you.
Right.
You leave, leave college. What are the three things that you would like to impart
yes.
To people
yes.
that they should be doing?
Yes. You want three? I'll give you three, and I'll give you more.
Well,
that's my area of expertise.
As many as you like.
Okay, let's start. Here's the thing. Let's talk about somebody without a degree and wanting to get into the workforce. How can they – what should they be doing? And especially if they come from poverty and didn't have opportunity, what is the issue? Here's my first bit of advice, and I want to get on to the others too, is be very careful when you're getting into a first job not to be concerned about pay, but be concerned about a first job that gives you some training and some experience, because that's what you'll be trading as you trade up in your life's cycle. And so if you just take a job, any job, just so you can get some pay, you're going to lose. Because if you ever want to get into a job that has a career path, you'll be at the bottom of the list and never get taken. So I'll just shorten that so I can get on to the other points. First thing is be really, really, really patient and persevere and stubborn to look for something, anything that gives you some a job that gives you some skills and training that can be used to move on and move out of the jobs. That's my first bit of advice. So now you're in the job because you were smart and you started somewhere. I started at $37 a week, but that's not the point. Next thing is I learned this really early on because I had a mentor when I was quite young. It's work harder than everybody else. Work harder. It's not your brains that will get you ahead. It's the fact that you work harder, are more passionate, more committed in the job. And that's a big distinction, something I've always followed my whole life. Work harder than everyone around you, always. The next is one that I believe so strongly in, and that is be more important to your employer than they are to you. And the way that works in my little world is, look, at whatever you do, be better at it than everybody else, as best you can, within your ability. Be better than them. And so that as you grow in the company, you're more valuable to them, you become indispensable than they are to you, and it gives you so much more benefit relative to promotions and pay and so on. Be more important to your employer than they are to you. And then another one, and Don, I hope you might, so I'll throw this in. Never allow someone else to shape your life for you. Don't let anybody else tell you what your limitations are, what you can and can't do, what you're able to do. You need to be courageous and disciplined and work towards goals that you have that you can get to. Malcolm Gladwell in his book Blink talks about innate bias, and I told the story many times that I'm sure glad I didn't read that back when I was 17, or I would have just gone to the work in the mines because I ignored the issues that were roadblocks for me and pushed through them. So those are four guidelines for the young person starting out and wanting to make themselves into something with or without a degree.
I don't think either Dan or I would argue with any of those.
Nope.
Huh, Dan?
No, how could you? Yeah,
absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say to our guest, following up what you just said, when I was a broker for Merrill Lynch in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. I was the leading producer in my class in the whole country.
Yep.
And I had an opportunity to go into New York and to teach some classes in the training school for new brokers. I had a manager, there was a quote office manager position who was responsible for looking after the trainees. And I went in to see him, and he was there when I went into the training program a number of years before that. And he said, you know, the world is full of a lot of average people, but the people who excel get the headlines. The people who work the longer hours, make the more calls, go out and see people, do all the things that everybody else should be doing but won't, those are the ones who succeed.
That's it.
Work ethic. It's a work ethic.
That's it. Absolutely. We all know it. The reason you can't argue with me is you both have exhibited it, and I've lived it. Those are guidelines. It's hard to do, but those are my guidelines for somebody starting in the workforce and wanting to get ahead. Just get that first job and make sure it's a job that gives you some level of skill or training. Otherwise, you'll never get out of a rut.
To share a little bit of my background, I needed a job to go to college, continue in college, and I was lucky enough to get one as a copy boy, the lowest rung at NBC News. And in three weeks, I knew what I was going to do the rest of my life. But with the 2.5 or 3 years I spent there, and what I learned from that experience, as the lowest of the low, really went well. And you mentioned about the fact that do more than others. There was a news writer there that she paid. It was a woman, and she, as a matter of fact, was one of only two women on the staff, and she paid to have an extra set of wire copied set aside for her, so she could once every 2 weeks or so find that gem of a story, which was the difference in her life. I remember that because that really set her. You know what the name of that woman was? Barbara
what?
Walters.
Oh, I'm telling you, what I've just offered you is real life lessons that you just shared. That copy boy job taught you some skills and some training in a field that you're able to be in the rest of your life. That's what I'm talking about. And you made nothing. That isn't what you got. What you got was a wealth of. So again, we're all in agreement on those basic premises, but that's how you get ahead.
Actually, I made more money than you did. I was a union shop.
Well, good for you.
As a coffee boy, I made more money. But anyway,
the point is that it isn't a matter of the money that why you took the job either. Anyway, I'm wondering again, off track. But it's that don't be focused on. I could have gone and worked in the mines out of school and made what was considered a lot of money, union wages, but it never would have gone up the rest of your life. I chose a different route. So. This is so fun. I really enjoy this interaction. What else can I share with you?
Unfortunately, we could go on and on, but have to come back.
I would really enjoy it, and we can talk on anything, but where I feel expert is around the issues of value-based leadership, and everything else is opinion. Anyways, this has been really fun, and the two of you are exceptional examples of how you get ahead in life. So thank you for this opportunity. It's been really fun.
Well, the name of your book and how people can get it?
The book is The Dividends of Decency, The Dividends of Decency, and it can be pre-ordered at Amazon or any of the local bookstores. And it's coming out April 16th, I think, in the U.S. and May 1st in Canada, The Dividends of Decency by Donald Lee Shepherd.
Do you have a website?
The website is donshepherd.com, and S-H-E-P-P-A-R-D. And yes, a lot of information and data there as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Donald Shepherd, he's been with us. He's an entrepreneur. He's an author. He's a Canadian who's now an American. And we're really glad he came on board today.
As I am. Thank you again. Let's do it again sometime if you can fit me in.
You got it. Dan, do you want to have the final word?
Yeah, just thank you for your insight. And we want to remind our audience that this show will be up on the website tonight. And you can go to our website, recalculating.biz, and look at not only this show, but all the shows that we've done now, over 100 are on our website. And listen to some other fascinating, interesting people that we have a chance to talk to on our show on a weekly basis.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Marcus Lemonis, J.D. Powers, and John Scully, and 100 other presidents and experts contributed to Recalculating the Book. Why did all these people agree to contribute to the book? I'm Don Mazzella, and I'm the editorial director of Small Business Digest. And for 20 years, we have been offering small business leaders information and data to increase profits. Recalculating the Book was named the best small business book by the Independent Press Association. Whether you need help with marketing, staffing, finance, operations, technology, or many other subjects. They're all here in Recalculating the Book. They're now available at Amazon at a reduced cost. We've also created the radio program Recalculating on Recalculating.biz.
Dan, healthcare is a complicated adventure for many people, especially small business leaders. With us today is Gina Lisa Monterosso. She's founder and CEO of the Medicare and Medicaid Advisory Group, and she helps Americans better understand how to navigate this complex world. And I have to tell you, even with an MBA, I still don't understand it. So, Gina Lisa, I love that name. Welcome
thank
to the
you.
Program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay. Gina, Lisa, first tell us a little bit about your background and then about your group.
Sure. So I've worked in the healthcare industry for close to 30 years. I worked for the hospitals and nursing homes. And basically my job was to kind of analyze patients coming in, financially based on a diagnosis. And then from there, we would kind of calculate to see if this is the best person to come in, if the insurance was going to pay at a higher rate or a lower rate. So it was an entitlement analyst position. And what I saw was a lot of people were struggling to pay for their medical bills. Nursing homes are running in New York City around $18,000. Home care is running about maybe $15,000 a month if someone requires 24-hour home care. And during the course of the year, I ended up, I was pregnant, and I gave birth to my daughter, Tara. She's 22 now, and she was born with Down syndrome. And I had to navigate the system, and I had no help. And I kind of connected with all the caregivers and patients that would come to the nursing home and hospitals, and I was like, I get it. You guys need education. You need someone to hold your hand through this system. And voila, the company was born.
Okay, and so tell us now, what your company helps individuals and companies to better navigate the system. What do you do exactly?
So we work for the community, meaning people living at home, and we assist in preserving all the income and assets so our clients are able to qualify for Medicaid. So when people retire, some people have IRAs, 401ks, and it's a nice little sum of money. What people do not plan for is that a chronic illness. And you can have $100,000 saved up. Once you have a chronic illness, that's going to deplete within a year. So we work with Medicaid and making sure that we're able to get our clients eligible for care, and they're still able to preserve their income and assets. And then we also do education to caregivers because we are never prepared to take care of someone. You know, we plan a vacation, you know, we plan a birthday party, but we never prepare in the event that we have to end up being a caregiver. And our clientele, we work with the aged, that's 65 and over, blind, and the disabled. And the disabled could be any age.
Are you centered in New York? Or are you just New York? What's your geographic footprint?
We are tri-state. I can consult nationally. We just made 4 years as a business here in New York, so I'm still working on kind of conquering all of New York State and the tri-state area. But knowledge-based, I am national.
Well, I've got a lot of questions, but Dan, why don't you take over for a little bit and talk about it from your standpoint of Florida, et cetera.
Sure.
I would love to. Welcome, Gina Lisa. What a wonderful, wonderful, romantic name.
Thank you.
Are you named after somebody?
No, my parents could not decide on one name, so they just took the names and put them together.
There you go. All right. An original.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify a point. Did I understand you to say that you primarily work on Medicaid as opposed to Medicare?
No, we do both. We are Medicaid and Medicare consultants. Our business, majority of our business are people who have long-term illness, and we are preserving their assets for Medicaid. But there is a Medicare side of our company as well. And we assist people in navigating and picking the correct Medicare insurance to get them up and running when they're about to retire.
Okay. Terrific. Let me ask you a Medicare question.
Sure.
And if you can answer it, fine. If not, if you want to get back to us sometime later, we'll be happy to put your answer on the website. If a husband and wife go past 70 years of age, and the husband decides that he wants to take his Social Security, his Medicare premium is deducted from their Social Security. And it's usually some percentage of their Social Security income. What I don't understand, and I have a money management practice. I've been managing money for almost 45 years. And my clients are now getting older, and I was just with one over the weekend that's getting ready to enroll in Medicare.
Okay.
And what is confusing is if both the husband and wife worked, the conventional wisdom that I was told is that the wife can be entitled to one half of the husband's share of what he gets from Social Security. Okay? You with me?
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you.
Now, but it appears, and maybe I'm hearing it wrong, that the wife who is getting one half of the Social Security benefit is charged 100% of the cost of Medicare of the husband against her income. Is that right?
So the only person that retired was the husband.
They're both retired. They're both retired.
Okay.
So she will get
her Social Security.
She gets half of the husband.
Right. The calculation would come out to half of the husband, yes. But there's the Part B deduction.
The total, the Medicare A and B for the wife is 100% of what the husband pays. Yet she's only getting half the money the husband pays.
Correct. I will tell you. So reason being, Part A, Medicare Part A is for hospital coverage.
Right.
When we work, we get taxes out. That's what we're buying into.
Yep.
We're buying into insurance. We will get covered in a hospital. Part B is also a buy-in. But you buy in at the time of retirement, and it's a flat rate. You can't negotiate it. Everyone has to pay the same premium if they want Part B coverage. And Part B, you want Part B coverage. That's going to cover doctors, your medical equipment. It's going to cover therapy. So you're buying into that.
Yeah, and that's truer whether you're in New Jersey or in Florida. You have to have a Part B, and that doesn't cover everything, so you have to have a supplement on top of that.
Correct, because Medicare only covers 20%, 80%.
Right, and you need the supplement. So now, if the wife chooses to and has paid Social Security in all of her life, but she chooses the husband's benefit, half of the husband benefits, what happens to what she's paid in?
So this is, I'm going to get a little clarification, because basically how it works is if they both retire at the same time, it kind of works out even as far as how much they put into the system. So we have to put in at least 36 credits of working credits in order to be eligible for Social Security. The benefit amount it's pretty hard to always kind of figure it out because they have this crazy math equation, but she will also get the amount that she also put in, but they also take into consideration the husband's income as well. I wish I had, and I'll do a little more research how they actually do the calculation, but she wouldn't be losing out.
Here's the reason why, Jean-Lisa, why I'm asking the question, is that where I live down in Southwest Florida, the people are coming in, 3,000 families a month are coming in, and a lot of elderly are people over 65, I should say. I shouldn't say elderly, since I'm 72 and I don't consider myself elderly, but other people might. They're coming in, and they are very confused. And sometimes what they do is they go back to their boss or the human resources department at the company where they were working for, big or small. And by and large, they're of no help. And so the reason why I'm asking your question, I have one more question. If there are listeners out there on our program, and we know there are, corporations who the retirees in those corporations are bugging the human resources department, is your organization something that we could say to presidents of corporations? If you've got a large retirement group of people, maybe you need to go to Jean-Lisa's company and see if there's a way that you can work together to work out solutions for your retired employees. Is that something you would
Yes, absolutely. Because what people don't understand about Medicare is that so we've been watching the news lately, and we've been hearing how maybe the healthcare system is moving towards being private. And everybody's in an uproar. Everybody's like, no, we don't want private, can't be private, and a lot going on in the news about healthcare. What people don't understand is that we actually have been in a private Medicare healthcare system. And we also talk about the word universal. And with Medicare, we also have kind of sort of been on a universal health plan as well. And I'll explain.
Mm-hmm.
When you apply for Medicare, there's two types of Medicare. There's something called traditional Medicare, and that's that red, white, and blue card. And it'll have the letters A and B. I call that plan the Freedom Plan. That means you can take that Medicare card and you can go to any doctor who accepts Medicare, and you will get charged. They will bill the 80%, and you will get charged the 20%. Now, there's something called that's Medicare A, right? And then we buy into Medicare Part B. They'll take roughly $100-something out of our Social Security check if we opt into buying Part B. But you want to buy into Part B. Then there's something called Then there's something called Medicare Part C. Medicare Part C, so the government went and contracted with all these private companies, United Healthcare, all these companies, and they're saying, we're going to give you a chunk of money, and we want to know if you want to be Medicare. And they said, absolutely. So now we have HMOs that are Medicare as well. And those Medicare companies, you have to be super careful about. Because number one, when you turn 65, you don't want anyone to be the gatekeeper of your health care. You want to be able to pick and choose any doctor or any hospital. That's what the traditional Medicare does. That's the public one that's standalone federal. The
that's
HMO,
the red, white, and blue A.
That's the red, white, and blue card, and it has the letter A and B.
Right.
The HMOs, obviously, they've been given a chunk of money. They want to make a profit on that money. So any service, any medical service is always going to be questioned. You have to go in-network to their doctors. And it's a struggle to get anything paid from these HMOs. And a lot of our seniors are suffering because they're sick. They have these. They don't have time to be on the phone to kind of nag all of these HMO companies. So what we advocate for, we tell everyone, just take the traditional Medicare. There's no referrals. You go wherever you want. Right. It's national. It's good. Don't enroll into an HMO. The bad part
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
The bad part about it is that these HMOs, these private companies, they're so good at their marketing, right? And everywhere, they're at the hospitals, they're at the pharmacies, and, you know, they tell you, oh, this is a great plan, stay with us. And all of our seniors are enrolling into these HMOs, and their care is being compromised by these private companies.
Right. So let me just stop here for a second because I want to turn it back to Don. We only have a few moments left. How can people, business owners or individuals, reach your company for advice and counsel?
They can call our office, 646-745-9122. And we also have a website, www.mmag.org.
mmag.org?
Correct.
Super. Don, back to you.
Okay. I have a lot of questions, but I want to start. You know, I am totally confused by my Medicare, you know, and I'm certainly totally confused by the drugs. Sometime in October, my druggist tells me, well, you've used up all of your monies, and then you have to pay a full price. Well, my doctor says I'm only entitled to one MRI a year, et cetera. It's a world I simply don't understand. We're so glad to have you, Gina Lisa, on board. But I'm going to ask you a question. It takes a big step to step off into the private to create your own company, in this case an organization. What made you decide to do it?
My daughter, again, I was young. I was 26 when I gave birth to Tara. I had no idea what Down syndrome was. I remember when I gave birth to her, they didn't show me the baby until a day. And I was so worried and concerned. And then they finally had a meeting, and it was a bunch of social workers and doctors, and they told me that she had Down syndrome. My life with her would not be a healthy, comfortable life. And if I wanted to give her up for adoption that day, there was an adoption agency ready to adopt my daughter. And it just stunned me. It just really stunned me. And I'm like, where's the congratulations? I have this beautiful little girl. Please let me know what Down syndrome is about, you know, so I can advocate for her now and later. And I remember they just gave me this photocopy sheet of the National Down Syndrome Society, and I was left out in the world with Tara, and I had to navigate. I had to do my research. I had to make sure that she got the best care. I had to make sure that everything was perfect. And I finally, you know, figured out this is what people need. People need to navigate the system appropriately with a professional, because it could financially bankrupt you if you don't know how to utilize your insurance.
That's so true. But yeah. It's amazing that you, from your personal things, you ended up creating this organization. How many people do you have in it, and what are your plans for the future?
Right now we have 8. We really rely on our technology. We are a consulting firm, so we have our own software where we're able to process the Medicaid applications so that our consultants here are able to be on the phone and consult our clients and making sure they're able to navigate the system appropriately. For the future, you know, I want everyone to understand what's going on in healthcare today, and I want everyone to really think about themselves and their family members. There's so many things being thrown out right now, and, you know, we can give up this so that we're able to get some financial benefit. But it's not going to – why would you want that if you tomorrow get diagnosed with Parkinson's? Tomorrow you get diagnosed with MS. Those tax benefits, they're not going to help you. You want to invest in health care, and that's something – for the last 30 years, I talk about it. That's a good investment. It's actually better than a stock, because it's going to keep you alive. The stock is not going to keep you alive.
Well, we're so glad you're on the program. One more question. How do you make your money?
Our clients pay us privately. All of our clients are not eligible for Medicaid. So we are able to, with our legal department, make sure that our clients are eligible for Medicaid and preserve their retirement and income.
And do you charge an hourly rate or a flat fee, or how do you charge?
Yeah, we charge a flat fee. We charge a flat fee, and all of our clients stay with us indefinitely because we have a social work team, we have legal counsel as well, and we already know the care plan that we put in, so our clients stay with us indefinite, and we do not charge an extra fee for that.
That's truly amazing. Gina Lisa, again, your website, because we're running out of time. Your website again?
www.mmag.org.
And your phone number?
646-745-9122.
Thank you so much for being with us, Gina Lisa.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A link will be on our website tonight. Our listeners can find out more information. Thank you so much.
Sure. You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tell me, Dan, tell me about your latest book.
My current book that's coming out, I should say, is
Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's really the first book written for children between the ages of 9 and 12 and their families, dealing with dementia. Dementia is a growing problem with the elderly in the United States and around the world. And we are not very well informed about what's going on, what's happening. So I wrote this book in the form of a mystery. And I have two little girls, 9 and 12, who have a magical power to seem to be able to find things that are lost. And so they go to their dads and moms and they say, you know, we work all over the neighborhood helping people find things, and we seem to find things. And their dad says, yes, you have a magical talent to do that. And they said, we'd like to start a business to see if we can help other people. So they decided to start a business. The two girls' name are Hudson and Charlotte. And they start H&C's Lost and Found. If you've lost it, we find it. And so they build a business, and they convince the dads to build them an office and a treehouse in the backyard. And they get busy making posters and flyers trying to get customers. And their dads take them downtown, and they put them in the windows and on the telephone poles and light poles. And they go home, and first week goes by, and nobody comes. And the second week and third week, and nobody comes. They're really, really dejected. And the fourth week comes, and there's a knock at the door. And they walk over and open the door, and there's a young man standing there with one of their flyers in his hands. And he says to them, my dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is because she's lost her memory. And your flyer says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory? Well, they don't know anything about memory. So they take his name and they go see their dads to see what can happen. And the story evolves into how they learn about what dementia is and what's going on in the body when somebody has dementia. And then they decide, while they can't find their customer's memory, they can help him build the tools to retain her in his memory. And so at the end of the book, there are about 10 to 12, 13 things that families can do together to work on to preserve the memory of Grandma and Grandpa so the generations can know who these people were. And that's the story.
What a great book. When will it be available, and how can people get it?
Well, it'll be available on Amazon.com. A lot of people who have read it, who've had moms and dads that have been stricken with Alzheimer's and dementia, tell me that they really now begin to understand what's happening in Grandma's brain. And we took a different approach. Rather than do the typical brain cross-section, I work with the artist, and we design highways in the brain. And there's a brain of one of the little girls and the brain of Grammy. They both have highways, roads. But the girl's brain, everything is green and go. Grammy's brain is full of no left turns, do not enter, stop, no right turns. So all of the messages that need to come from our brain get screwed up and we can't function. Great illustrations, though. Wonderful illustrations.
Well, say goodbye, Dan.
All right.
Time for us to go.
Thank you for joining us. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, you can go to recalculating.biz. And you can pick up this show and past shows to expand your knowledge as becoming more successful entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You know, Don, one of the things we need to do is remind people they can go to recalculating.biz and they can listen to this show and any show that we've put on the air. So go to recalculating.biz and download our videos where you can actually see and hear the subject matter that we're discussing.
Well, Dan, we've had an interesting day today.
Mm-hmm. Some interesting guests and lots of things for our business partners, the entrepreneurs of America who are listening to our show, can take and put into productive use. So that's all we've got for today. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.